Welcome to the Rainbow Room,
our podcast about writing, representation,
and gay stuff.
This is season 4, episode 30, Red, White, and Royal Blue, the movie.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to season 4 of Rainbow Room. I'm Andrew Steyer, and this is my guest, Ramiro Leal.
Hey, guys, how's it going?
I should also mention, Eric is taking a break from the podcast. He's been doing a lot of really great projects on his own in New York. And now I actually live here in LA and I'll be able to interview a lot of guests in person, which works out really well, starting with Ramiro, who, I actually know from high school and have since, seen him do all these great things.
We go way back.
Yeah, yeah. We were in Boy Scouts together.
At some point, that's right.
Ramiro was the first one to ever show me If You Seek Amy.
That's a great song.
I love that song so much.
It's a great song. Yeah, we go way back. We were...
Real quick, I think...
That's not connected.
What is this?
Oh.
Yeah, this just fell out.
You see, Amy.
I go way back. I mean, we lived in the same town, Texas, San Antonio. We all went to the same middle school, the same high school, the same groups, everything. It's like such a tight community over there.
Yeah. Well, I moved to Texas halfway through high school, so I didn't go to the same middle school as you. But you may have gone to the same middle school as my sister.
Correct.
Yeah. Who's also an excellent actress in her own right. So yeah, tell our audience what you've been up to since then. What are some of the things you've been doing?
Love it. Yeah. So I pretty much after high school went to college. I got my BFA in acting. That's what I wanted to do. That's what I wanted to pursue the entire time. And I knew shortly after that, once I graduated and got my degree, I just wanted to move into the city and like do the work, right? Like I knew that was my path. And obviously with a lot of planning and figuring out what would be the best way to do that. Because as we know, like LA is an expensive city. Like there's a lot of things that it's, you know, it's the city for TV and film. I moved out here, made it happen. And I primarily wanted to focus on TV and film and acting for TV and film, right? I think theater's great. Theater's what I got my degree in. But the meat and potatoes for me, for my career, was going to be in film. So I moved out here. Through the ups and downs of, you know, just learning about LA and, you know, making your own path, because there's no one path or the one right way of how to do things in LA, right? Especially like if you want to be an actor or any creative field, it's not a cookie cutter process. Started, you know, paving path for my own stuff. And I've been very lucky to have a great team that I work with. I've done several movies as an actor. Several commercials, national commercials, also leading those. And then I've also dived a little bit into producing, directing, writing. I mean, at the end of the day, it's all creative work. Mm-hmm. And I think they all merge fairly nicely if you know how to navigate between those. So I'm very lucky to be able to do that and continue to pursue that pretty actively.
Yeah. And you don't even have to have a side job right now, right? It's basically all your full-time career. Everything you do is related to acting, producing, or writing.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm very excited about that.
That's correct. Incredible. Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I saw the commercials. Remember, show me the commercials. They're great.
Thank you.
So good. You're such Latino stud in them.
It takes a village, you know, I just show up and then they make me look good.
Well, you work a lot on looking good yourself because you also do. Do you do some modeling or is it more you take pictures and then you pitch those or how does that all work?
I have never professionally done modeling until recently.
Okay.
I think I was advised early on, which I'm not going to say if it was good or bad advice, but that I should not focus on that because it has a shorter lifespan.
Okay.
But what's interesting is that now I'm getting more traction in that and getting content for photography, magazines, this and that. After years of not diving into it, right? So it's like I'm now, how do I tactfully say this? There's nothing tactful about it. The idea behind like modeling and magazine and runway and all these different things has changed so much, right? Like before it was like, you must be 6'2", you must be 22, you must like all these different things. And now people want, you know, like they want the skinny type, right? Like just because they clothes look better on them, they drape better on them and whatnot. But things have changed so much now. People want like the fit guy, people want the muscular person, people want the athletic build, people want the ambiguous look, the what are they called, not male or female, but just like androgynous look, mm-hmm. right? So there's things have opened up so much more, and even, you know, then people want the heavy set, like there's so much more openness to that in modeling, print work, you know, stuff that I think I've dived into it, and I'm pretty excited about that. Yeah,
nice. And that's also inspiring here. So does that mean even me at 5'8" on a good day could get into modeling, or there's
not? I think it depends. I think it depends. Honestly, yeah. I think we are very fortunate that there's a niche for everyone and there's a market for everyone. It's just finding that market. And also with that said, getting the proper advice, right? Because one person might tell you, no, you're not 6'2", but someone else might be like, I'm looking for 5'8". Mm. You're that, mm-hmm, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not getting discouraged by one opinion.
Yeah.
Right. I think that's the important part, or the lesson learned there for me.
And obviously looking model hot helps book roles, right? But do you think the act of having stuff in magazines, et cetera, helps also with booking roles?
I think so.
Nice.
I think, how do I say this? I don't think it's exactly correlated magazine to booking roles. Mm-hmm. The way that I see it is it's publicity and marketing to get more eyeballs on my look, to get more people to see what I look like, so that then I can pitch myself easier and be like, you've seen me in here, you've seen me there, I want to work with you, what can we do together?
Nice.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I see it less of a, I think it's all encompassing career like together rather than like separate avenues of efforts or work.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
And then one of the things you've been working on is you've wrote a pilot.
I did. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
What can you tell us about that?
So right now we're actually very excited. My writing partner and I worked on this project, this idea that we had for about 6 months. We've gone through 5 different renditions of just, you know, the writing process, updating and whatnot. Actually, false, 7. A couple more edits that we just made. And then we knew that we needed to have an edge with this project, right? I can't really tell you much about it, but it's along the lines of like Modern Family and Schitt's Creek. We really wanted to do something within the comedy realm, network-related, 30-minute, and diving into the All-American show, right? And I'm going to put a pin on that because I'm going to circle back on it later on. But it's, you know, it's a show for everyone, while addressing topics that are very relevant right now, timely, and just funny, like, you know what I mean? I think we're calling it First Gentleman, and we'll talk more about it as we go. But I think it's we're pretty excited because we're in the pitching process. We have some leads, and we're hoping to be able to sell it and really do a lot with it. We also have a sizzle reel that we've worked on, which is also just like the part of the edge that I was talking about, or the step up. It's like, here's the script, here's the Bible, the concept, but also here is a sizzle, so that you know exactly how we want it filmed, how we want it shot, how we want the actors to be, right? It's not just like an imaginary, like you can interpret words differently than I could. It's like, here is exactly what we want.
Yeah, and you had to explain this to me because I didn't know, but a sizzle is like a small trailer.
It's just, yeah, correct.
Yeah, and Romero showed me the sizzle. I got to get it. Yeah. It was
really good. Thank you.
I can cut this next part out if you want, but I wanted to ask, or wanted to highlight, and it features queer characters.
Right, it does. Yeah, that's the part that I wanted to go back to, because I know that this podcast specifically talks about representation mm-hmm. in media. And something that my writing partner is very, very strong. Like they identify like super, super strong with the community, right? And so when we were writing, we wanted to marry a combination of different approaches to the community and to representation across the board, right? Whether it be LGBTQ, whether it be Black, Latino, you name it, Asian, right? Because in this script, something that we really focused on is to have equal representation based on our world nowadays, mm-hmm. right? So it's not about like, we must check off every single one of our script. It's saying, hey, do you have Black people in our communities? Yes, we do. Great. So why is it on the script? Mm. Do we have LGBTQ? Yes. Why is it on the script? So what's happening in the real world must be an equal image of what's happening in this script. Mm. Otherwise, it's not real. Right?
Makes sense, yeah.
So Yeah, we were very excited about that. And the biggest thing that we discussed between them and I is, and again, I say this, there's no one right way to have representation. But the two focuses that we had is they wanted to focus on like making it known, making it loud and proud and known, right? And the approach that I said, it's that's great, but can we normalize it? And the reason I say that is because if we are not making loud and proud, we are accepting that it's normal. So by not dragging light or attention to it, we're not putting anything down. It's just saying we don't have to do that because I'm telling you it's already normal. Right?
Yeah.
It's like we don't have to have a party, or like to give you an example, we don't have to celebrate women at work. It's just normal. Right? Why make a celebration? If I say celebrate women at work, you know, we must have a day to celebrate women at work. Now I'm accepting that it's different.
Yeah.
And I said, it's not different. It's just, it is what it is, right? And something that I loved about the shows that we mimicked or got a lot of inspiration from, like Schitt's Creek and Modern Family, is that you know what's happening. You know that characters are diverse and well-cultured, and you have all demographics and all walks of life in there, right? But they didn't have to tell you for you to understand what was going on.
Yeah.
It was normalized.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, that's the way to connect with people, because the biggest thing that we want to do is teach people through comedy. That's the idea behind this project, right? Teach people through comedy. And if we can subtly find ways to connect with those communities in positive ways, and then connect with people that might not understand it as much, but then, you know, a season later, be like, oh my gosh, wow, I'm questioning the way that I've always been addressing this or that. We've made an impact.
Amazing.
And that's what's important to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. That's a really cool outlook and way of looking at representation too. And perfect for this podcast.
Yeah.
Speaking of this podcast, let's get into the meat of what we're going to be reviewing today, which is Red, White, and Royal Blue.
Love it.
The movie specifically on Amazon Prime. And I've never seen it before, so I'm really excited. We've reviewed the book on the podcast before, so I'm super excited to see the movie. You have seen it.
I've seen it.
Yeah, and am I in for a treat?
I think it's a great movie.
Amazing.
And I think it's a great movie. It was very tactfully done. I also had prior viz on it because at some point in time, a couple of years ago, I auditioned for it.
Oh yeah.
Which is great.
Auditioned to be in this.
Which was great.
Funny.
Yeah.
You auditioned for the role of
the Latino lead.
Yeah.
Alex. I'm not bitter. It's fine. We're here. No, I think they did great.
He actually came on this podcast just to like slander the whole movie.
To hate on them. Yeah. No. I think they honestly did great. It was very well cast. I mean, that was at least my opinion. I don't want to spoil it for anyone or for you. It was very well cast. And they, like we've, you know, like the topics that we've covered so far with my pilot and the shows that I've liked and that you like, they tactfully managed to have conversations about things without being head on. Right.
Oh, that's amazing.
It's like, it's very normalized, but also sheds light in a different way, right? And it's nice to have that kind of content where not every single movie, not every single series is about suffering. It's about like the sad story, right? Or the like over the top something. It's just, we're here and we're watching this, and it could happen today, it could happen tomorrow, right? It's like, it's just very every day.
And it has Uma Thurman in it, right?
That's right.
Amazing. I can't wait.
Yeah, so I want to see what you think about it.
All right. Well, on that note, let's watch the movie.
At this point, we watch Red, White, and Royal Blue. Prince Henry is played by Nicholas Galitzin, who is openly straight and was quoted in an article saying that he feels some guilt in playing the roles, but also commented that the roles are more than just their sexuality. Taylor Perez, who plays Alex Claremont Diaz, the bisexual character, has mentioned that he thinks it's inappropriate for people to be asking questions about these actors' sexualities, and has defended Nicholas Galitzin against some bolder questions. The film is directed by Matthew Lopez, who co-wrote the film with Ted Mollower. Mollower? Not sure.
And we're back! Woo! I cried a lot. I don't know. Did you see me crying?
No, I just heard sniffles.
Oh, I'm such a sucker for gay love stories. I'm also just in an emotional state. I was crying a lot. It really made me want to look for love. It really made me want to find a love as pure and as like nice as they have, you know. It was inspiring.
Yeah, it was dramatic and funny.
Would you say
it was dramatic? It was dramatic. And funny. Yeah.
Yeah. It was dramatic. Let's talk about what we loved about it. What our thoughts on it were.
I like how they shed light into a story that is very common, but is not seen as common. And they made it very normal. It's what we were talking about earlier, right?
Yeah.
It's they didn't go to any extremes. They didn't like over-sexualize anything. They didn't over pull focus into anything. Like, you know what I mean? It was just very, you're in this world, you're in this story now, and you just were taking along for the ride. Yeah. And I think they did very tactfully navigate all those conversations, all those character dynamics, all those relationships in a very tactful and elegant way.
Yeah. There's a lot of love in the story too, which mm-hmm. is really nice to watch. They managed to have conflict while still showing characters that really like each other.
Right.
And they might not over-sexualize, but it's worth pointing out the characters are sexy. Oh my God.
They have a great cast. They have a great cast.
With great bodies. Those men are so hot. Oh my God.
Well, they have to do the sex appeal to pull the audience in.
I kept telling Ramiro, I'm like, man, watching this movie makes me want abs. I need to get abs. It's very inspirational on that front.
So that's every movie in Hollywood, though.
Yeah, true. Maybe it's different because they're like, these ones feel more relatable to me. Like,
well, that's what's interesting about this story, right? You're looking, or what we're discussing here is representation.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that you say that I'm not saying that for the first time, but you feel seen, you feel heard, you feel like your story was mimicked on TV, right? Yeah. Or on film or whatever medium you're watching this movie on. So what a pleasant experience that is, right? To be like, oh, you know what I mean? Because you don't see it often.
Yeah.
And I think that that's the important part to highlight out of this story, that it's not, you know, it's not, we were talking about other communities and whatnot. It was published in a medium and in a way that it's for everyone, right? It's not just like you're going to the BET channel or the Latino channel or the, you know what I mean? It's like, it was just mainstream,
mm-hmm.
Prime, and yeah. You related to it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that for other movies, people relate the same way if they feel like they fit that audience.
Yeah, we talk about this on this podcast, the idea of windows and mirrors, which is like a good story has windows into people's lives while also having mirrors where you can see yourself reflected in it. And I feel like there was definitely like a universal appeal to this. And it was cool, you know, the Latino representation, right, of Alex, obviously something you can speak to more than I, but like, it's really interesting hearing him talk about how like, oh yeah, anyone with a Z in their last name wasn't in the position of power. And it's like, wow, that's really like interesting to think about. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that like doesn't resonate with my psyche. Obviously I can emphasize it, but that's where, for me, that's more of a window than a mirror, right?
Like, well, what's interesting, it's that the writing was very well crafted, very well written, very well directed, very well shot. Everything was great. But ultimately, I don't know if you caught on to this, but when they were making these statements, these truths that some people might know, some people might not know, like you said, wow, that was such a realization. It was done through comedy. Mm-hmm. And then you're like, oh my gosh. And then it hits and you're like, oh, wow. Anyone else heard? Yeah, we all heard it. Got it. Okay. You know what I mean? So it's like you're feeding people information, feeding souls and feeding knowledge through comedy. So it doesn't hurt as much, but you do click with it. You're like, oh, interesting. And then you think about it.
Yeah, you know what I mean? You've hit on that a couple times. That's really important to you. The idea of like sending a message without it feeling like an attack.
Correct.
Where it's like, oh, we're all laughing, we're all having fun. Yeah, I mean, that's what I do with stand-up comedy too.
Yeah.
If you like that, you should try doing stand-up.
I stick to my scripts. Like, we're scripty. What's next on the script? What Got it. Okay. No, even though, which is funny because stand-up is ultimately at some point scripted as well.
Yeah, no, it's yeah. It's not at some point, it's all scripted.
Right.
Yeah, you're a writer. You can write your own script, do some stand-up. We need,
Well, I don't know about that. It's a lot. I'll go for the kill in my jokes and then, because see, here's the thing. I like dark comedy a lot.
Okay. Yeah, you can do that on stage.
I like dark comedy and it's a very fine line, you know, because I've seen a lot of comedians lately. I mean, with the whole like Netflix push and since the pandemic, you know, there's been a rise for stand-up on platforms, right?
Mm-hmm.
Social media as well, which is great. And there's a very fine line of like tiptoeing around a joke. How much can you dive into the truth of it? How much is it, you know, comedy? How much is it like, you know, it's a very fine line. I'm sure you know this. You lived through this too.
Yeah, well, and there's so much. That's a whole different world. There's also like how you write a joke and how you mean it to be perceived and then how the audience perceives it.
And it also depends on where you're doing it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's
you know,
true. That's
is it something as simple as, is it a 7 p.m. showing or a 9 p.m. showing? Is a different crowd.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, honestly, you kind of just have to judge that when you're in the crowd.
Right.
But I think you'd enjoy doing it. You can try it out.
I appreciate it.
Although stand-up is a lot of work, too. But yeah. To the point of comedy and stuff, I was also going to say, oh, my God. I don't remember if these were all in the book. Because I read the book somewhat recently. This movie had some zinger lines. It was mm-hmm. so funny. First of all, Zara, amazing character.
Great character.
We love that character every time she's on. Character. She is fantastic. But the one line that really stood out was when she's like, I need you to kind of like the light comes out of his ass and you have a vitamin D deficiency. It's like, that's good writing.
It's great writing. Yeah. And it's also, I mean, the writing's great, but the delivery, yeah. You know, from an acting perspective, her performance was spot on, you know,
yeah.
And it made you, I don't know if it was written like that or not for a specific purpose, but depending on the character choice that she took, it could have turned at someone that you hated the entire time because she's pushy, right? At the end of the day, she's like pushing. Mm-hmm. She has an agenda to fulfill, and she's pushing everything forward for the political campaign that's going on in the movie. Not to ruin it for anyone, but the political campaign that's going on and the narrative of the political campaign.
Yeah.
So it could be written to the point where
By the way, at this point, we're past spoilers. Don't worry about spoiling the movie. They should watch
it. It could be seen in a negative way, but she tactfully made it to be like, we have an agenda to fulfill, but there's a connection, a deeper connection, a human aspect to her mm-hmm. drive in her career as well, which is when she connects with all the characters.
Yeah.
The mom, the kid, everything.
Yeah, I was just realizing too, like, I don't know if I go so far as to say family-friendly movie, but it's, as you said, it's a universal movie. This doesn't feel like a movie this feels very palatable to straight people, I guess is what I would say.
Well, and I applaud it. It's the way that it was presented.
Yeah, right? Yeah, yeah. But like,
I don't think it's a kid's movie. I think it's very much PG-13.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not something that you wouldn't see in a movie theater. It's very mainstream.
Yeah.
But the way it was presented.
And there's a lot of family values to it too, you know? Right. Like this is a, you know, they're a monogamous couple, they're kissing and, you know.
Well, but here's the thing. To challenge the viewer or anyone, you can flip any of those people. Male, female, 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 male, male, whatever, and the storyline would still be an accurate storyline.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
There is a lot about this movie that is specific to the struggle of being gay and how it's perceived by the mass public, which I think is good, right? Because I also like when a movie... I don't like when if I feel like they just swapped a straight character for a gay character and tried to write it the same. So you need to be
right.
truthful to the differences there, even if they're subtle. So, but I see what you're saying.
But what I'm saying is the storyline itself is, not global, it's wide appeal.
Mm, yeah, yeah.
The
yeah.
storyline itself, concept, let's put it this way. The concept itself is Romeo and Juliet. It's a love story that can happen and then happens.
Yeah.
They don't die at the end.
It's a
forbidden love story that at the end of the day has resolution, right?
Yeah.
So it can be any character. The way that they tactfully made it work is, like you said, that line of the vitamin D deficiency and looking at someone's ass kind of thing, right? That is specifically hitting an audience that would understand that kind of joke.
Yeah.
Right? And they have a lot of those kind of jokes in there.
God, I love when the security guard opened the door and saw them kissing and just went, oh God. And said nothing else.
Yeah, they have a bunch of lines that are specific to that, but you can change the comedy to be appropriate to whatever audience you want to, you know, hit.
Yeah. Now, I'm curious, what made you choose, because I said, like, oh, we could do any sort of queer movie or queer media, and I feel like you're pretty instant on this one. I mean, obviously you have the connection to it because you auditioned for it, but is there anything else about this movie that, like, made you be like, oh, yeah, I want
to see this one? Well, not to give too many spoilers, but, so I watched the movie because I wanted to see what they had done with the project, right? Because when I auditioned for it at some point back in the day, I mean, I got Viz on part of the script early on, and I was like, oh, that's a pretty decent concept, right? And I've never read the book or knew anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think they were calling it, they released what the title was for us to know what it was, but, you know, I didn't know more about it, or I didn't know anything about it back then. So I wanted to see what it looked like. On top of that, the project that I am working on and selling right now is a political related subject.
Mm-hmm.
And so I wanted to have Viz on how they showed the world, how they showed the language, how they dealt with these characters.
You wanted to have
visibility on visibility or
Viz for short though.
Yeah. Viz. Okay. Sorry. That's very, company lingo there, you know, Viz and back around and following up and all that kind of word. It's understanding what they did with the world and how just learning of their tactics and how I could pick up on some of those things for my own purposes and the projects that I'm developing on as well.
Amazing. Can you, any other behind the scenes you can tell us of what it was like auditioning for that or what you learned about the project as you were auditioning or anything like that?
It was a very fast turnaround, which is fairly standard. And I'll tell you, like, I mean, it's been what, maybe like 2-3 years since the audition.
Mm-hmm.
I had Viz on all the scenes. I can tell you, can, it's funny to see what I had, the materials that I auditioned with, the choices that I made versus how many renditions later the script had and what got published. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. There's lines that I had that are not there anymore. There's lines that were added. There's scenes that got put together, like, you know, so you see that whole thing evolve into the final product. And that's pretty interesting.
You said you had Viz on every scene. Does that mean you'd like had a rough outline of the entire script?
No, just a couple of scenes. Not all.
Oh,
of them.
Okay, okay. Yeah. Cool.
It really depends on what stage they're on and what press you audition for them that you see what's happening. And it also depends on the casting company and then what the network's releasing. Like, they might just want you to have Viz on 10 pages, visibility on 10 pages. They, you know, they might be like, here's what you need to work on, but here's the entire script. It just, it depends.
Was this in person or was it a self-tape?
Self-tape.
Okay. Okay. Mm-hmm. Cool. Do they ever do in person anymore? Even
they do. They do. Okay. And I love in person auditions.
Oh, yeah,
they're great. I don't think they're for everyone, but they're great. Well, but here's what sucks about it though. With remote auditions or self-tape auditions, people can see way more tapes, right? But there's always something about seeing someone in person that you can't get through a self-tape because you don't know if someone sells a self-tape after 60 takes. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, time for 60 takes.
Right, right, right. And like, what's interesting is, like, for me as a producer, yeah, it's great that you have a beautifully crafted self-tape, but I don't have the time as a producer and actor, right? I don't have the time to do 60 takes on set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We have the luxury of 2-3 tops moving on. You know what I mean? So I think there's something about being able to see someone in person and see what they can deliver in 2-3 takes.
Yeah.
Because that's really a whole new level of things, right? And I think there's so many other things involved as well. You probably know this, but like, it's unfortunate, but when you're doing self-tapes at home or whatever, or by yourself, there's a level of like, do you know how to set up the lights correctly? How to DP the scene? Yeah. How to do all these different, the technical aspects. which I'm like, as an actor, I didn't think I would need to know that, but yeah, you know what I mean?
That's your job now. Yeah.
Correct. Correct. And so, you know, it's just more things to focus on. And then, you know, if you're not technically savvy, does that affect your overall tape, you know?
No. I want to go talk about the writing of this real quick. I thought it was really interesting as someone who read the book to see how they adapted it to screenplay. And one of the really interesting things is where they chose to, because it's a long book and you're trying to get that all onto a movie, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where they chose to zip through things and where they chose to take time. And the biggest one is I felt like they really zipped through basically their enemies. And then they have one sincere moment right before parting ways. And then suddenly they're texting each other and the texts are boom, 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 boom. And you kind of just like see that all happen. And that part happens. I feel like from what I remember reading, it seemed like that was more of a slow burn of like, uh-oh, we see what's happening here. Mm-hmm. Whereas this, it's like, oh, boom, they're already like texting nonstop. So that was really, you know, not, I won't say rushed through, but that was, you know, done very expediently. And then you have other parts where they're like slow dancing among the statues. And they really took their time with that. Mm. That was a really long scene. And it was emotional. And I was crying. And I thought it's like a very good lesson to think about when adapting something to screenplay of like some of the plot elements you can maybe get through faster. Because what we really care is like where is the viewer going to feel, right? And that's where you want to like take the time. Because like that's what we watch a movie to do is to feel things, right? Mm-hmm. So. I was feeling things.
I was trying not to make a joke because you were deep in thought, but you were like, that's what you watch movies to feel. And I was like, and to pick out, you know, continuity discrepancies and green screen and where's this? Where's that? Just kidding. That just happens when you've been sitting in the editing booth for too long.
Yeah, watching a movie with you, you need to point out every green screen.
Like, up, continuity. There it is. Just kidding. It's a lot. Like, honestly, like, but successfully making a movie is like a planetary alignment. Like it is truly a masterpiece. Yeah. And congratulations to anyone and everyone working in that field. I am very excited that I get to participate in all of those efforts and projects, but it is truly a planetary alignment because everything that can go wrong will probably go wrong and it still succeeds.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But also back to what you were saying regarding the moments that were selected to be showcased on a movie. I think it's great that books have, you know, a slower buildup and they kind of like pull you in and pull you in. I think to a certain extent, we're also, you have to deal with people's attention span, people's interests, and a lot of those decisions on what makes, you know, the cut is based on that.
Yeah.
There's a lot of technicality and, you know, one of the first things you said is there's a lot of skin and a lot of abs. There's a reason for that, right? It's not just like, let's put naked people. No, there's a reason. You fell for it. There it is. it's part of the marketing.
Oh my God. yeah, those men are attractive. And everyone in the movie is attractive. It's cool to see Percy. That was always a character I liked in the book, and see his like flamboyant jacket. I was like, yes, Percy. Yeah. I feel like there's another thing I wanted to mention. Oh, I was just going to say, I was pretty impressed with the quality.
Yeah.
Just in terms of like, you know, with a book that had this much appeal for something that was going, you know, you could probably get away with doing a lot less. And then something that was, this just went straight to Prime, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, it really could have been chopped together. And I felt like there was a lot more attention to detail than I expected. And the script was a lot funnier than I expected. It's like, oh, this has some really good zingers in it. Yeah, I thought the acting was good. It's great to see Uma Thurman. She's great. Mm-hmm. And that very interesting accent.
It's a choice.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, we can also talk about the Texas authenticity and that representation, since we're both Texan.
And Latino, a little bit. And Latino.
Oh, yeah, how did you feel about the Latino representation?
Here's the thing. There's when someone says Latino, Hispanic, it is, there's a spectrum of, you know, level. And again, we're not seeing much of this backstory, right? Was this character born in Texas? Were they born somewhere else? Like, what is their extent of, yeah, of that? Because also, like, we've lived in Texas, and a lot of people in Texas speak Spanish. And a lot of friends that we've had in Texas, their parents might be Latino or of Latino descent, but then the kids don't speak any Spanish. And you're like, what happened? Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think I enjoyed what they did with it. I think I personally have a deeper connection to my Latin roots. Mm-hmm. But also I've been very fortunate to live some years in Mexico, some years in the US, and, you know, just have that kind of culture, right? But maybe is the name Alex? Claremont? Mm-hmm. Yeah, Alex did not get that experience. So maybe his like broken English, broken Spanish, or, you know, Texas Spanglish is all he knows, and that's mm-hmm. okay. Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah, yeah. They said his abuela came to America, so that's kind of when you get that timeline. And even little things like that, like, oh yeah, he calls his grandma abuela, you know, it's like, oh yeah, there's mm-hmm. And you're right, even though he's super westernized, because he did seem very westernized, but yeah, there's still, you know, elements of him that have that, like, Latino authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that is different from your experience, it sounds like. It's
something. Correct.
You lived in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Were you born in Mexico?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
When did you come to the States?
I moved to the United States when I was about going into high school. So 16-ish. Is that right? Yeah.
Whoa, you were in Mexico until then?
Mm-hmm.
What part?
Monterrey.
Okay,
cool. Yeah.
Monterrey. Monterrey, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, wow. Well, good on you for having such good English, and you could have fooled me. I thought you came up when you were six or something.
No.
You were born here.
No, I appreciate it.
That's pretty cool. Well, let's wrap up with our final thoughts, unless there's anything else you wanted to cover that we haven't covered yet.
No, I think thank you for having me. It was such a great movie to cover, and great subjects to cover it as well. And, you know, and how the industry as a whole is adapting more genuine, honest, and true to life stories, which is great to embrace by everyone.
You make it sound like, oh yeah, this is something we all deal with, being the son of a president and falling in love with a prince, like, you know, relatable everyday stories that we all experience.
Well, no, but it's like what you said, it's the story, they just happen to be living that story, right?
Yeah.
At the end of the day, like we said, it's the Romeo and Juliet story.
Mm-hmm.
Put in a different, under a different lens, under a different filter, and you were very touched by it, so it did something, right? It did something. That's what it should be doing.
Yeah, it's nice to see two characters who really love each other, and I also just, like, personally, I love that kind of banter. Like, that's the kind of banter I have with my friends, and so, like, imagining getting to have that banter and have that level of friendship with someone who I also like get to love and be with is, like, that's super powerful.
Mm-hmm.
Because their banter is very fun. The way they, like, take shots at each other is, and, like, slowly realize they're falling for each other. Oh, I'm a sucker for that kind of stuff. I'd say my final thoughts on the movie, really interesting to see what they did with book to movie adaptation and take lessons from that. Really inspired me to look hot. Maybe also just talking with you, who is like has abs and is like model hot. I'm also like, all right, I need to be in this industry.
Listen, it's not me. I tried to destroy it every single day. It's my mom. She did it all.
Your mom gave you the jeans.
My mom gave me the jeans, and I'm every single day trying to destroy them. That's what happens here.
No, you're being hard on yourself. You're very disciplined. I see you go to the gym twice a day or whatever. We went to the gym together. It was cute.
Cute.
Yeah, it was good.
That's good.
I thought that still a fantastic story, still a really fun watch. It was also really cool to think. I remember reading the book and being like, oh, some of these elements, if this ever gets made into a movie, are going to look great on screen. And they did. Like, the cake fall.
You wanted the cake fall.
Yeah, like, that was written for a screen. Like,
getting trapped in the closet together, getting caught by Zara, getting to see Zara's reaction.
So good.
Yeah. Just all of that. And then, of course, they have all these beautiful scenes and different castles and courtyards and the watching polo. Beautiful rugby? Men in suits.
Was it no, polo? Of course. Oh, polo. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's polo.
Yeah, that's right. That's
talking about, mate.
It's mate. I confused it with...
That's Australian.
What's rugby?
No, British people say mate.
Doesn't matter. Anywho, delusional.
It wasn't water game. But rugby is also a sport that they play there. Yeah. And yeah, I thought it was a great watch, and I think everyone should go watch it.
Yeah. And I just realized you're wearing Christmas socks.
Oh my god!
Catch you in the next one.
It's Christmas in July. No, it's June. Happy Pride, y'all! Oh yeah, Happy Pride. We didn't mention that. Happy Pride. Well, thank you, Ramiro, so much for coming on and calling me out about my socks in the podcast. Love to have you on again sometime. You've been appreciate a pleasure it. To have. Thank you for showing me this movie.
Thank you.
Goodbye, everyone. Yay. I'm Miss Eric.
That's all for this week. If you like the podcast, the best way you can support us is by recommending us to others. You can also subscribe to us and rate us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube by searching Rainbow Room Podcast. You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at Rainbow Room Podcast and Twitter at Rainbow_Room_. Thanks for listening. See you next week.